The next case to be heard is number 2015-2055, Navistar Incorporated versus the Tax Commissioner. And the appellant is Navistar. And Ms. Gall, whenever you're ready, please present your argument.
May it please the court. With me this morning on behalf of Navistar is Mr. Leo Heinlein, who's Vice President of Tax from corporate headquarters in Chicago, and my colleagues and co-counsel and longtime friends, Anthony Ehler and Stephen Smishek. All of us are here essentially on behalf of the plant that Navistar owns and operates in Springfield, Ohio. It was opened in 1902. At the time of the trial before the Board of Tax Appeals in this case, about 1,000 people work there. They had good jobs, manufacturing jobs, in the state of Ohio. Generations of people and families have worked in that plant. There are today more employees, as noted in the public media, because the recession is over, and Navistar, which the testimony is clear, is a cyclical business, has been and hopefully will continue to be in an up cycle. There are thousands of retirees in the Springfield, Ohio area who worked at that plant. They have all been treated badly by the tax administration of the state of Ohio, and we are here before the court to seek correction of the bad treatment. This is the second appeal before the court. The Board of Tax Appeals ruled against Navistar on its $27 million commercial activity credit claim. We appealed here to this court, which gave us essentially almost all the relief sought by Navistar. In its judgment entry of August 18, 2015, this court reversed the BTA decision and ordered it remanded back to the BTA. This court told the BTA expressly, quote, to determine, consistent with the court's opinion, whether the valuation allowance originally reported on the requisite state form was or was not in compliance with generally accepted accounting principles. Generally here we've called a gap in the arguments in all the briefs. It was. At that point, the Board of Tax Appeals should have ruled in favor of Navistar, granted the $27 million tax credit against the commercial activities credit, which runs over a period of 20 years. The board instead did not do its duty, and it spent two short paragraphs on its remand analysis. First, it abandoned any attempt to find support for the commissioner's position in the testimony of Professor Ray Stevens, and I'll address that later. The board spent two paragraphs relying on future events which did not exist and could not be taken into consideration as of October 31st, 2004, the end of the fiscal year as required by the statute. On behalf of Navistar, its employees, and its retirees, we respectfully ask the court to summarily reverse the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals and not remand it to the board again, but to order the commissioner to reinstate the credit as found, and there is no dispute about the numerical calculation of the credit, and allow Navistar that relief which was given to it by the Ohio General Assembly. There is no dispute in the record, the voluminous record, the pretrial depositions, that Navistar's books and records that existed as of the end of the fiscal year met GAAP. There were two expert witnesses and one lay witness, Carol Garnett. The first expert witness was Doug Pinney. He was a longtime partner at PwC in Chicago. His specialty was accounting for income taxes, and his real specialty was valuation allowances. As the court knows, the statute says you take deferred tax assets as of the end of the year for the applying taxpayer, and you do a valuation allowance calculation, which isn't as hard as the commissioner has made it sound during all these proceedings. We asked Mr. Penny at trial, and he testified at supplement page 605, lines 11 through 16, the following. The question was, in your opinion, was the valuation allowance established by Navistar for its fiscal year ending 10/31/04 as originally reported and filed in February of 2005 reasonable? Yes, was his answer. At supplement page 610, lines 12 through 19, Mr. Penny further testified in response to this question, is the partial valuation allowance that was on Navistar's books and records as of the date required by the statute supportable under GAAP? Answer, yes. I reviewed the documentation that the company had maintained with regard to the original amounts, and that would have been supportable under GAAP. The second expert witness was Elizabeth Savage, a CPA, a partner in an accounting firm, and an expert in both restatements and valuation allowances. One of her signature positions was chief financial officer of Sun TV, which was a longtime TV and appliance store in Columbus that had almost exactly the same facts. Ms. Savage reviewed the books and records of Navistar that Navistar had used to come up with the valuation allowance. That supplement at 712, lines 16 to 25. She testified at supplement 716 that the deferred tax assets, which are the underlying credits, were summarized on adjusting journal entries as is appropriate and required under GAAP. And her undisputed opinion at supplement 735, lines 10 through 21, was that the valuation allowance, as reported to the commissioner, was supportable under generally accepted accounting principles. Additional information from Ms. Savage to support her opinion is found at supplement pages 744 through 745. She testified also that there was nothing false or fraudulent or misleading or misrepresentations in the underlying deferred tax asset accounts. The last person to testify was the longtime VP of Tax, Carol Garnett. She explained at length, starting at supplement 473, how Navistar calculated its VA, actually, which is done on a quarter-by-quarter basis and then annually at the end of either the fiscal or the calendar year. She gave examples, exhibits that are in the record, appellant's exhibits, 37 and 38 are long and fairly boring summaries of these calculations, and also testified without contradiction that the valuation allowance for the year ended 10/31/04 was GAAP compliant. At the trial, the commissioner had, we actually called first Ron Potter, who at that point was the executive assistant tax commissioner, and he ran the audit division of the Department of Taxation. On direct examination and cross, the tax commissioner's chief of audit testified that the only reason the commissioner refused to accept Navistar's $27 million CAT claim credit was that there was a restatement that occurred after the paperwork was filed. That was the only reason. The commissioner never itself audited the valuation allowance, never looked at books and records, and of course, never at that point in time, until we got to the BTA, called in an expert witness to talk about this. Instead, the department hired a guy named Professor Ray Stevens, then a retired professor of accounting, who testified that really he had never done a valuation allowance calculation in his entire professional life. He had never taught about them. He had never read them. And when asked if he was going to review at his deposition, whether he was going to review Navistar's books and records for the 2004 valuation allowance, he said no. In his trial testimony at pages 173 to 174, Professor Stevens said he never examined any books and records from Navistar, and as a result, he had no opinion on the correctness and compliance with GAAP of Navistar's calculation for 2004. I can give you other citations quickly. Page 175, page 180, page 148. Professor Stevens said he did not independently research the VA calculation for fiscal year 2004. He said then on cross-examination, the reason he never looked at Navistar's documents or reviewed the calculations was because he didn't know how to do a valuation allowance. The commissioner has no evidence, didn't have it before trial, didn't have it at trial, and as a result, the Board of Tax Appeals erred egregiously in this case by saying that the restatement financials, the only basis upon which the BTA decision was rendered, were supportive of the tax commissioner's position. I think I have a couple minutes left. If I may save them for rebuttal, please.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gall. Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court. I think I've just departed to the twilight zone. We started off here listening to my colleagues say that the court, in remanding the case to the commissioner, quote, reversed the commissioner. That's actually false. The commission was affirmed in every respect, but one, and with respect to that one, there was a remand. So already, what my respected colleague has said is completely false. And then she goes from there, and virtually everything else she said is either not correct or misleading in a very fundamental way. One of the things she said was that the restatement financials were based on future events, implying that they occurred after the fiscal year ending in 2004. We may recall that the relevant snapshot period here for determining the evaluation of the net operating loss carryforwards is the fiscal year ending in 2004. In 2006, the 2004 financial statements were originally filed by Navistar with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And then in 2007, there was an investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, at which my colleague didn't even reference. But as a result of that, all the records of Navistar were seized by the federal authorities. And it was determined, and again, there was no reference by Ms. Gall to this, even though this court, recognized that there was a massive overstatement of asset values to the tune of billions of dollars and an overstatement of income for those financial statements, including for the 2004 tax year. So we have a situation where Navistar materially misstated its financial condition to the tune of billions of dollars of assets. For the deferred tax assets alone, they overstated it by more than $1 billion based on the restatement financials that the SEC required for the 2004 tax year. So, and the reason that they had to restate, as is true of any restatement, there must have been material misstatements in the originally filed financial statements for 2004. And there were. And that's what Navistar itself said in its restatement of financials. They said that the valuation allowance that reduced the deferred tax assets to a net realizable value of zero, in other words, 100% valuation allowance, was required under GAAP because the prior determination of what that valuation allowance was not in compliance with GAAP. Carol Garnett, the vice president of tax and testified at the Board of Tax Appeals. She was a CPA. She also was intimately involved in that restatement. She testified under oath that she agreed with the statement, the representation made in the certification of the financial statements and in the financial statements themselves, that the original valuation allowance was not in accordance with GAAP and generally accepted accounting principles. And why? I read to her the statement in the financials, and she agreed with it, the restatement financials that said the original financial statement valuation allowance was not in compliance with GAAP because it did not use the proper underlying financial income data. Because that financial income data that was relied upon in the original reports dramatically overstated income. Instead of having positive income, there should have been, under GAAP, negative income to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. And so, as we said in our brief to this court, what the Board of Tax Appeals said, and frankly, what Dr. Ray Stevens, and I'll get to him, and as far as his credentials, and everything she said about him was incorrect, and you can look it up and I'll go through it. But with respect to what Carol Garnett stated under oath, she agreed with the statement that the original valuation allowance was not in compliance with GAAP because it didn't correctly consider the history of the losses, the income losses that immediately preceded that period, that would have informed Navistar's management of what the correct valuation allowance should be. Because basically we're talking about net operating carryforwards. They can only be used if there's positive income going forward. And so because they had a history of losses, Navistar had a history of losses, including in 2004, massive loss. It was determined by management after looking at the GAAP compliant financial income information that they couldn't use those net operating carryforwards going forward. They would be used up. They have a shelf life or an expiration date, and that expiration date would occur prior to any potential likelihood of positive income. And in fact, if we look at the actual history of what Navistar did for after 2004, they were still filing corporate franchise tax returns until that tax was phased out in 2008. And part of the record shows that for the Ohio net operating loss carryforwards and their Ohio corporate franchise tax returns were unused. And the answer for the reason why is because for all those years after that, until the tax was no longer in existence, Navistar reported huge losses in Ohio. So it basically, that history bears out the reasonableness of the restatement, which reduced the net operating loss carryforwards and the other deferred tax assets to zero realizable value. Now, with respect to Ray Stevens, this court has twice had occasion to expressly recognize Dr. Stevens as an authority, and he has extensive knowledge of deferred tax assets and actually presented seminars and materials concerning that. And the reason, what they were talking about when they said Dr. Stevens didn't have any opinion about the earlier valuation allowance, the allowance that then was restated, is because that was clearly, and he said it was based on clearly inapplicable data, which is the overstated income figures that the restatement financials found and determined were grossly overstated. And if that then in compliance with GAAP would have been tremendous losses of hundreds of millions of dollars, over $600 million for the period we're talking, for the three-year period for which the restatement financials were issued. And so what we're looking at here is not in the restatement financials, what Navistar did is they looked at the same underlying financial data that Navistar looked at when they did their original financial statements for that 2004 fiscal year end. The difference was the original financial statement was not in compliance with GAAP with respect to determining income. Most of the non-compliance with GAAP had to do with, instead of recognizing expenses and cost of goods sold additions in the year in which they were incurred, they were deferred to more current years so that the income was artificially inflated for the current period,
Can I ask you a question about the BTA's decision and in discussing the testimony of Mr. Penny and a couple of the other Navistar witnesses?
Yes.
And there's a statement about what they did and didn't consider in arriving at their opinions. Could you
Absolutely.
Talk about
Thank
that
you,
a
Your
minute?
Honor. What Doug Penny and Beth Savage considered was only the non-compliant financial information concerning the income. In other words, they never looked at the restatement figures for what the income should have been under GAAP. And that's very clear from the record. And actually, all Doug Penny looked at was the financial statement itself and some summary documentation. And that's also true of Beth Savage. She looked at some journal entries. And what they were testifying to is they were saying that if, in fact, the income figures, which they didn't analyze as set forth in the original financial statement for 2004, if those income figures were correct, then the valuation allowance was reasonable. But the problem with that, and I actually attempted to ask them, well, what if you use the restated financial income figures, i.e. the ones that were compliant with GAAP? And there was an objection. Objection, we didn't hire them to testify about that. So, I mean, basically, they so narrowed their questioning that what Doug Penny actually was testifying to when Marianne, you know, was asking the question, is it reasonable? She was saying, assuming that the income figures that are non-compliant with GAAP were in fact reasonable, would the valuation allowance also be reasonable? And the answer was yes. But, you know, Ray Stevens didn't look at, when he was testifying, didn't look at the original valuation allowance in terms of how that was determined, because it was based upon the non-compliant financial income figures that showed gains instead of massive losses. So we put that in our brief. We're trying to come up with a pithy way of saying that. And the board effectively, they said it much more elegantly, but it's pretty much garbage in equals garbage out. If the data inputs are garbage, then the outputs have to be garbage. And in this case, the only Doug Penny and Beth Savage only considered the garbage. So they didn't look at the good figures and say, well, if the good figures had been used, they still would have had a reasonable value. It's still been reasonable to use the valuation allowance. They never did that. And when I asked them to do that, oh no, be very afraid of that. They were instructed, and this is also, and we took depositions, and the depositions, it was also clear, and that's part of the record of the case. The deposition testimony was made part of the record of the board's proceedings. And you can see in those, they are also, their witnesses were instructed not to give any opinion with respect to if the restated financial statement income figures were used, i.e. the GAAP compliant ones were used, would the original valuation allowance be reasonable? They declined to answer that. So they didn't even get to first base on that. What we're saying is that the financial statement, and if we look at the financial statements prior to the issuance of the restatement financials, after the SEC came in with their subpoenas and took all the records, seized the records, Navistar was forced to disclose to they're a publicly held company. They were forced to say, hey, you can't rely on these earlier financial statements in total. In every respect, you can't rely on them. And then in the actual restatement financials, they said with respect to the valuation allowance for the deferred tax assets that was originally set forth, they said specifically that that wasn't in compliance with generally accepted accounting principles. So, and we think the Board of Tax Appeals had more than probative evidence here. They had the compelling evidence. And so we ask for this court to affirm the board's reasonable and lawful decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. Ms. Gall, you have 2 minutes and 54 seconds.
Thank you. To Navistar, the Supreme Court has narrowed this second part of the case, which has been going on since September of 2011, to one issue. And that issue is that the statute as written, mostly by the tax commissioner, and agreed to by the Ohio manufacturing community, is to be construed in one way. That is, was the valuation allowance GAAP compliant at the end of the applying taxpayer's fiscal or calendar year. Here, the commissioner only ever did two things, regardless of what counsel says, most of which is not in the record, and in fact never occurred at any point in the proceedings. There are only two things the commissioner had going. The restatement, the numbers for which did not finalize until 3 years later. And this court, we believe, has said you do not look at the restatement financials. There was no ability of Navistar on June 30, 2006, when the report and the claim had to be filed. We didn't have the numbers. So the court, I believe, has indicated that it's at the date in the statute, not before and not after. Because if it were after, and the commissioner's argument is that you can use any number at any time, the valuation allowance would have been zero and the claim would have been bigger, the valuation claim. To the extent, the other thing that the commissioner suggests and alludes to, nobody had to look at every book, record, and document that Navistar had at the end of its fiscal year. If the commissioner were to be believed, we'd have to be looking at the plowing guy who was plowing out the parking lot in Springfield in the middle of winter to see what he was booking and to see if it was restated. That was not needed. It wasn't necessary. The statute doesn't require, and we don't think that the court's decision in the first appeal requires it either. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gall. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision. We'll now take a 10-minute recess.